and welcome Rotarians and guests. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest speaker today, Michael Appel, current president of the Melbourne Cricket Club, which is of course one of the oldest and largest sporting clubs in Australia. I think up front it's important to say that he's a very keen Melbourne supporter. How many Melbourne supporters have we got here today? Plenty. Plenty. Hoping for a better year. I also want to acknowledge David Jones down here today, who was a popular president of the MCC, would you believe, from 2003 to 2007. Long time ago now. Now, the club has 130,000 members and an extraordinary waiting list of around 215,000 people. I've been putting grandchildren down lately, so it's probably going to be 30-year wait or something. Michael was a part of PwC for 24 years and chairman of the firm for the last 4 years, and he retired until he retired in 2016. And PwC, of course, is a corporate member of our club. Michael's held a broad range of corporate and other directorships, including Scotch College, Laurison's Girls' School, and the Royal Melbourne Tennis Club, where he has been an outstanding real tennis player for many years. He's also a very keen golfer and family man with a very personable wife, Taddy, and three children. As a proud member of the MCC for 62 years, I'm hoping Michael continues to support our annual $15 membership subscription. Management of the Melbourne Cricket Club is particularly challenging, with some complex stakeholders, including the AFL and Cricket Australia. But the president, the committee, and the manager of the club do a very good job in that regard. Would you please join me to welcome Michael to address us on the MCC, a private club with a very public purpose. Please come up, Michael, and he'll be pleased to answer a few questions at the end, which... Thank you, Michael.
So, thank you, Michael. Just get my timer out so I can stick to time. Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, Peter, for those lovely words of welcome. President Kevin, for having me along today. I'd like to acknowledge Rotary. What a fantastic organisation. You do a lot of good work, and wish you best of luck for your centenary year and obviously 2023 when you've got the global meeting here. Hugely important thing for Rotary and for Melbourne. And I hope we can get a lot of them along to do a tour of the G, which I'm sure they'll be happy to do. Just to get me started today, it'd be nice to know how many people have been to the MCG for an event in the last year? Put your hand up if you've been to the G. Okay, we've got pretty regular attenders here, good. Members? And I suspect if I said keep your hand up if you're a 50-year member, it's probably going to be not too dissimilar. No, a few less, but there we go. Some people are probably not down as early as they like. Terrific. Interestingly, one of your members, I'm not sure if he's here today, David Fries, is he? No. He's not here today. I've heard on the grapevine that he's a regular attendee here. He's been a member since December 1939, which makes him in his 81st year of membership. Puts him only 14th on our list of longest serving members. We do a top 10 at the 50-year members lunches, so David's not too far off that top 10. So sorry he's not here to join us today. What I wanted to do today was cover a few areas, and it could be under an umbrella theme, if you like, of what President Kevin said earlier about keeping the stadium and the club as one of the great stadiums and one of the great sporting clubs of the world. So I'll tell you a little bit about the relationship between the Melbourne Cricket Club and the Melbourne Cricket Ground, because it's not very well understood. So I'll fill you in a bit about that. I will give you my thoughts on what makes the MCG such a very special place in the hearts of Melburnians. And I'll tell you a bit about what keeps me awake at night, because that's really important about what we're currently trying to do and where we're trying to go going forward. And I will speak about both of those things today as well. So the model for running the Melbourne Cricket Ground is an incredibly unique model. It's in modern parlance, you'd call it a public-private partnership. The land is owned by the government, and since 1853, when the ground was first established by the Melbourne Cricket Club, the Melbourne Cricket Club has had a licence to run the ground on behalf of the government, and that continues to this day under a specific Act of Parliament. So it is a very special collaboration between the MCC and the government which makes the MCG work. And it's been a model that's been incredibly successful over those 167 years, measured in various ways. Firstly, in how little the government has had to contribute to make the MCG what it is today. The contribution from the government to that ground has been almost insignificant over those years in the context of where the ground is today. And you will not find another sporting stadium in the world where that's the case. All the major sports stadiums in the world are heavily funded by the government because they struggle to make money on their own. The assets of the ground, the stands, everything there is all on the MCC's balance sheet, including the debt that's been taken on by the club as we've built new stands. So it is a very genuine model where the club takes the risk on behalf of the government. And the reason that model works is because we have such a fantastic member base and we have such fantastic established content at the ground. And those two things mean that we can run the stadium well without contribution from the government. The sports do very well out of the member model. In actual fact, both AFL and cricket make more money per seat in the members than they do per seat in the outer, because a seat in the member is better utilised than a seat in the outer. And the contribution the club makes to those sports is pretty much the same for when a seat in the members is used and when a seat in the outer is used. You wouldn't know that if you listen to the media, because the one or two times a year that the outer is reasonably full and the members isn't, obviously there's huge media attention, and I get a call from Daniel Andrews pretty quickly when that happens. Of course, the fact that more often than not the members is full and the outer isn't is not something that that gets a lot of media attention. But we are trying to fix that image issue of the odd occasion when the members is not full. So the sports do very well out of it. Our members love the model, and as I said, the government obviously does very well out of that model as well, because they get the ground run for them by someone who's run it for a very long time. And as I said, unlike the rest of the world, they don't have to make a great contribution. So what makes the MCG so special? It's partly history. A lot of members here, probably most of you would know, the first ever test match was played at the MCG, the first test match in the world. The MCC committee wrote the rules of Australian rules football. Obviously, we've got the history of the 1956 Olympics. So history is a big part. The numbers are a big part as well, because they're just overwhelming. It is the most used sports stadium in the world, and that's partly because we have multiple sports and multiple teams playing there, whereas a lot of the great sports stadiums in the world tend to have only one sport or only one team playing there. 3.5 million people a year come and watch sport at the G, and then we have a couple hundred thousand extra for other special events. Obviously, the Boxing Day test is hugely important, but football is 3 million of that 3.5 million. So obviously, the Aussie rules is a big driver. Of the 50 games we have each year, the average crowd is 60,000, and the average crowd for final is over 90,000. But to me, those numbers don't really explain why it has such a special place in the heart of Victorians. And we've been doing some work at the club trying to really get to the bottom of it. And the way we now describe it, and you'll be hearing more about this, is it's all about Melburnians and Victorians all having a sense of their own magic moment at the G and something incredibly special that's happened at the G that they remember. And for a lot of you in the room, that may well be attending the 1956 Olympics. It may be, there are still people around who saw Bradman make 100 at the G, and that's an extraordinary special moment for people who saw that. If you saw Carlton's comeback in 1970, then that's probably one of your special moments. For those that follow soccer, it's probably going to watch Liverpool play Melbourne Victory in a social match a few years ago, and we had 95,000 people turn up to the ground, which is still the highest number of people that Liverpool have ever played to in a soccer match, even though it was a friendly match against a team in Melbourne. If you're an athletics fan, it was probably the moment that Kerry McCann ran into the stadium during the Commonwealth Games in 2006 at the end of the marathon with 400 metres to go, and Helen Kazeki from Kenya was neck and neck with her, and they ran together for that whole of that last 400 metres, and Karen only managed to break away literally in the last 10 minutes to win by less than 2 seconds. That moment made even more sort of special in a terrible sort of way by the fact that Karen died less than 2 years later from breast cancer. If you're a young footy fan, it's probably, particularly if you're a Doggies or Richmond fan, you would have seen your team win a premiership for the first time recently. So, you know, that is obviously incredibly, incredibly special for some people as well. And we're hoping next month, when we host the T20 World Cup Final, Women's World Cup Final at the ground on International Women's Day on the 8th of March, that that'll be a pretty special day for a lot of young girls in Melbourne, because we are hoping that we can not only get Australia over the line as the winners, but that we can break the world record for a number of people attending a women's sporting event, which stands at just over 90,000. And we hope to break that record and make that a very special day in lots of ways. So that's why we think the G is so special, because if you talk to anyone in Melbourne, you ask them, what's your magic moment at the G? Everyone's got a story that they can tell you about the G. We want to maintain it as the great sporting stadium that it is, and we want to maintain the club as the great club that it is. To do that, we have to deal with a lot of difficult issues, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of my shopping list of what I worry about, because I think that then segues nicely into what we're currently focusing on and what we're going to focus on in the future. Security is obviously right at the top of the list, both from a crowd behaviour point of view and a potential terrorist threat point of view. I'm not going to talk about that a lot today, except to say that we're absolutely focused on it and are getting the best expertise we can from around the world on both of those issues, and we'll continue to just constantly evolve as we deal with both of those problems. There's a big emerging issue around the experience of watching sport at home versus going to a venue. And as the digital experience gets better and better, to the next generation, that's a big threat to us. If it becomes a better thing for the next generation to watch the game from home, then that's a really, really big threat to us. And linked to that is the fact that we all grew up, and I think I can say that based on the demographics in the room, with sport being a huge part of not only what we watched, but what we did. We all played sport at school. It was just, everyone did. And it was encouraged across the board. We all loved it. That's not what happens nowadays. The next generation that comes through, they're not all going to have played sport. So they're not all going to have a natural segue into watching sport from their experience of playing sport that we all had. That is a big worry for us. And we're doing a lot around that, which I'll talk about a little bit more. There's also a bit of an issue around, different sports being popular, and that's a great thing, and we need to embrace that. But obviously, our stadium really works well off the back of very long-term relationships with cricket and AFL. So while we love having the odd soccer match there and rugby league match and what have you, obviously we want to have great relationships with Cricket Australia and with the AFL to make sure those sports thrive, because they're the bread and butter of our content at the G. So, currently, what are we doing that responds to some of those concerns and threats? And the first thing we're always doing is making sure that the ground absolutely stays at world best practice in everything we do. And there's three examples of things we're doing in the current year alone that amount to about $55 million worth of projects that are good examples of that. The first is we put a new audio system in that we first used at Boxing Day Test, $26 million 3,500 speakers, one of the most complex audio-visual projects to retrofit sound system like that to this stadium that you will find anywhere in the world. I hope those of you that went to the Boxing Day test noticed the different experience with the sound system, because our intention is to deliver much higher quality sound at much lower volumes, because under the old system, unless it was up super loud, you really couldn't understand a word that was coming through it. And the logistics of making that work in that stadium, as I said, are hugely complex, but we think we've cracked it, so we're very proud of that project, and the ground will reap the benefits of that for many years to come. We've installed LED lighting in the light towers, which is a $10 million project. We don't get payback on that from a sustainability point of view, but we still did it because it is the best lighting from a spectator experience point of view, and it's necessary to do super slow-mo replays in both cricket and football. So even though we don't get a full payback on that, we had to do it. The third one, and we'll be reopening the Australian Sports Museum at the end of this month. We've spent $17 million doing a major refresh of the Australian Sports Museum. And I'm very excited about reopening that. To me, while it's great that international visitors go and everyone in Melbourne goes, to me, the linchpin of that museum is the kids. And it goes back to what I was saying before. The next generation of kids won't have all played sport, and we have some fantastic interactive areas in the Sports Museum where they really get a taste for the sports that that we play, and get a great sense of history and tradition that's gone on. And we would love to see every school child in Melbourne and Victoria see it as part of their curriculum, that they have a visit to the Australian Sports Museum as part of their curriculum, because we think that would really help with the next generation understanding sport and getting a love and passion for sport in the same way that that we all have. We've also been focusing very much on customer service, and again, this gets back to making sure the experience is a better experience than you get at home, and that people love to come. And it's a very challenging thing to do with 3,500 event day staff who are part-time employees only on event days, and also a very huge security contingent that we have at the ground. So we've developed a very sophisticated, what we call CARE program, which is a five-year evolving learning and development program for our staff around customer service and making the customer experience better. As I said, it's a very complex organisation to do that in. We're very proud of what we've done. We have won 2 awards in consecutive years for the best customer service program in the world by any organisation, which we're incredibly proud of. So that's not just sports stadiums, but any organisation in the world. We're also doing a lot around environment sustainability. When I talk to my children in their young 20s, that's just hugely important to them, and a big part of their value set, that any place they visit or any organisation they have something to do has a real focus on sustainability and is making a big effort. And we've won a lot of awards on sustainability recently as well through our water recycling plant. We have a $20 million water recycling facility underneath the grass in the park, which takes sewage water from the city, turns it into grade one water, which technically could be drinking water, but we don't drink it, to water the park and deal with all the toilets at the MCG. And we're also doing a hell of a lot more on a whole lot of different sustainability projects. We're doing a lot on our wicket. You would have heard a lot about that before the Boxing Day test. That was a real worry for us, although it was a worry because of the relentless media attention on it, and I suppose we have to take that as flattery, because there's just so much passion and interest in the MCG that when there was a sense that things had gone off the rails with the wicket, there was just extraordinary media interest in it. We were very confident that we were going to produce a good deck on Boxing Day. I'm not just saying that with the benefit of hindsight. I did say that in 20 or 30 speeches in December leading up to it. So I woke up on Boxing Day morning a little bit of a worried man, having been so confident about it, but I was very pleased with how it performed. And we did push the envelope and take an extra risk in that Shield match before Boxing Day, and unfortunately the weather conspired against us. It's a complex story as to why it didn't perform, but it didn't perform in a way that didn't undermine our confidence about what we're going to produce on Boxing Day. But we do have a we do have to change the turf in the long run. The Merry Creek turf that's been used traditionally at the ground for 100 and something years is not up to scratch for modern test match cricket. So we're trialling some new turfs which have a higher clay content. And it takes about 3 years, though, to trial a new turf, get the grass to grow appropriately, do all the right testing, and it's about 3 years before it can actually become a new test match wicket. So a lot of work going on with trialling different turfs and things at the moment, and we're looking forward to getting even better pitches in the years to come. We're doing a lot in our foundation, our MCC foundation as well, at the moment, we're focused very much on disadvantaged sport. We are the major sponsor of the Special Olympics. We're the major sponsor of the Bashahuli Foundation. And I'd have to say, I've got to know Bashahuli through our relationship with him, and he is an extraordinarily special man. What he's doing to build bridges between the Muslim community and the rest of Australia is actually quite extraordinary. And he's doing it through what he knows, and that's sport. And I can tell you that I was with him 7:30 in the morning the day after the grand final, because we asked his Muslim football team to have a match against the Jewish community team. And these are potential AFL footballers aged 17, 18, just coming out of school. And they played on the G at 8 o'clock in the morning the day after the grand final. And Bashir was there cheering them on. And if you could have heard his speech to these boys after the game, you would have been extraordinarily impressed. So we're very proud supporters of what he's doing. And we're also proud supporters of a number of Indigenous sporting initiatives. The Indigenous people have been great participants on our ground over the whole history of the MCG. Going right back to 1860, an early Boxing Day cricket match was actually a match between an Indigenous team and the members of the MCC. Played over 3 days at Boxing Day, and back in 1860 there were 10,000 people that came and watched that. The first touring team ever to the UK was an Indigenous cricket team. And obviously you all know they've been superstars of the AFL game. I did the numbers recently. While the Indigenous people make up 3% of our population, they make up 15% of the elite AFL footballers, of the 800 footballers on AFL lists. 15% of them are Indigenous sportsmen. I'm flying up next 2 months' time to open a new oval in just out of Alice Springs, Santa Teresa, an Aboriginal community. They have been playing on dirt for the last 20 years, and we've taken on a project of identifying the appropriate bore water, grassing their oval, making sure they've got enough water to sustain that oval going forward. And I'm really looking forward to going up and opening that oval. Going forward, the sporting precinct is a huge focus for us. We have the best sporting precinct in the world here, and I don't need to tell you why. I'm sure most of you from Melbourne, you know that we do. And when you go around the world, you just don't see anything like the precinct we have here. We have in between it some railway yards. And we're currently working to make sure that the government reserves the air rights over those railway yards so they can only ever be part of the sporting precinct, because it would be a huge disservice to Melbourne and Victoria if somehow some developer got in and got rights over those railway yards and literally divided the sporting precinct in two. Frankly, we're very unhappy with the six-storey building that Tennis Australia has built in the precinct there. It's an office building. We think it's way out of character with the precinct, and we are working with the government and Tennis Australia to make sure that more office buildings don't go up in the precinct and that it stays as a great sporting precinct. So that's something we're going to be working on over the next 10 to 15 years, because it'll probably take that long for it to be viable to cover those railway yards, but it'll probably happen in conjunction with the redevelopment of Richmond Station and probably with a rebuild of the Great Southern Stand in probably 10 or 15 years' time, which is likely to cost us around $1 billion. but it'll need to be done in a very integrated way with the precinct if we're going to get maximum value for the stadium and for Victoria out of how that works. We're going to be doing a lot more in future around playing sport and encouraging the playing of sport through our foundation. We have 14 different sporting sections and they have a lot of members, but we're going to be doing a lot more projects which will be joint ventures with government to get a multiplier effect on facilities. And we've done a couple of those already. We did that in Beaumaris, where we developed two football ovals and a multi-sports field with the government at a school there, and they're used by our MCC sporting sections, but they're also used by a whole lot of other sporting clubs, so we get a terrific multiplier effect by those facilities being there, and we funded the whole development of those facilities. We're doing the same thing at Elwood Secondary College, where we're putting in a multi-purpose pitch mainly for hockey, and again the school and other sporting clubs will use that during school hours and after hours, but you know, we have some time for our hockey pitch as well. So we think that's a great model going forward, running community partnerships like that. So we're not just investing for our sporting sections, but we're investing in a way that, as I say, gets a multiplier effect across the whole community. I'm running out of time, so I will leave it there. I think as far as the club goes, as was mentioned earlier by Peter, our major problem is our waiting list. It's nearly up to 220,000 now. If we don't make some change, we have a risk of a whole generation missing out on membership of the MCG in 30 or 40 years' time, because the weight that someone would have to become a full member under the actuarial calculations is going to blow out to 40, 50 years. And we don't think that that's sustainable. So we need to look at that problem now. I don't stand here today with the answers, but we are doing a very major membership review to work out how we solve that problem so that, as I say, we don't have a generation of Melburnians that literally miss out on being members of the MCG. So just in conclusion, thank you for having me along today. I'm very happy to answer any questions. We're very proud at the MCC of our role as custodians of this great sporting stadium and the great club that is the MCG, and we're doing our best to make sure it's good for all of you and for future generations. Thanks very much. Well done.